Does your basement leak only when it rains? At PermaSeal, we believe your basement should be dry all the time. For a free estimate, you know who to call, PermaSeal. 800-421-7325 or visit permaseal.net.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Listick, Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the world of politics and law you watch me cover on television every day to go into the world of the arts, film and theater and comedy and all sorts of other things that are sometimes more fun to talk about than politics. And today we get to focus in on a new film that if you haven't caught at a screening, you will hopefully catch up soon as its release increases over time. It is called Say Her. I'll explain, or you'll hear explained why in a moment. That is the title. But joining me is the, I don't know, the director, the producer, the writer, the star, the everything. Jared Kirschheimer joins me. Jared, thanks for being with me. This is a project of love for you.
Thank you so much, Paul. It is such a project of love. It's set at Sarah Park Weightlifting Club in Chicago, which is a famous gym known throughout the U.S. for producing major, terrific Olympian weightlifters that have gone on to compete for Team USA and also coaches. So it's a legendary place, and we're super.
And you filmed it there. I mean, you were using these actual sites in Chicago. We get a lot of Chicago in this movie.
I was so thankful because it's actually a Chicago Park District building, and it was really hard to get a permit to shoot there, and the hours are very, very restrictive. But we cut everything together, and we organized well, and we were able to get it done in a week. Believe it or not, we shot this in 5 days. Feature film, 85 minutes long.
Jared, you know you just got to send cash to the right people to make it. Just a joke. Just a joke, politicians. Anybody watching, it's a joke. So let's talk about the movie itself. And we'll get into the journey. But for folks who say, okay, it's called Say Her. What? I mean, you've already given us a little tidbit into what it's about. But what is this movie about? And you're the star.
So essentially, it tells the story of an over-the-hill weightlifter with mental health challenges that have, I don't want to give too much of the plot away, but he has mental health challenges from things that happened to him as a child.
And by the way, I have to say, I will not give secrets away. I'm very careful about that. Whatever you give away is up to you. I appreciate, I always tell this story of mine, which makes the point. I was interviewing the cast of Dear Evan Hansen, if you know that musical, and I said, is there anything I should not give away? And they said, please don't say that Connor dies. I said, he's killed in the first 2 seconds of the musical, but so I honor secrets of all kinds. Okay, back to you. Sorry.
Thank you. And I love that movie, by the way. I absolutely loved it. So he has some mental health issues that resulted from a rough childhood. And also he ended up working construction for a number of years in the neighborhoods in Chicago most affected by gun violence. So he saw a lot of violence up close that really hit him hard. And he had trouble processing. So his goal is to become an Olympian so that he can go back and help younger kids that have gone through the same mental duress that he has realize that they can have success in life, that they can do great things despite going through a lot of tragedy. So that's why he's so excited about becoming an Olympian, but it's not going to happen for him and he can't face it. So the film is about his journey, how to move past that point.
But the movie's not called Say Clay.
No.
It's called Say Her. So obviously it goes beyond him.
Right. It's called Say Her because he finds that his purpose is when he realizes he's never going to make it as Olympian is to go and mentor a young woman and get her to the Olympic Games. And that's why it focuses on her. And also Team USA, we have an amazing Team USA weightlifting team right now, one of the best in decades. And the men are wonderful, but the girls are really incredible. And it's looking like 2028 in LA, we're going to have the best team in the world.
And it's so talk about the sort of the, you wrote this.
Right.
But it almost feels like a documentary, almost a biopic. So how many of the players here are real?
So we were fortunate enough to get Jordan Dela Cruz, who just competed at Paris Games. She has some footage in the film, and Pyrrhos Dimas, who's actually from Greece, and he's the most decorated Greek Olympian in history, and he's known as one of the greatest of all time in the sport of weightlifting. You have some footage from him, so those two are real people, but the footage is cut in such a manner that it allows us to tell the story, And while Pyrrhos is playing himself, Jordan is playing a fictional character. She's playing a young girl that's in the movie growing up. She just looks much like her, so it fit perfectly.
What I also love is so many of the characters in this film, I mean, some are from the acting profession, some are not, and I'm really kind of intrigued by Randy DeBoer.
I love Randy.
Who plays Fred, because, I mean, as I understand, I mean, this was not somebody you took out of the next De Niro movie.
No, and the thing about Randy, he's got just the best Chicago accent ever, and he and I, we work together. We're both, so I, for the past 30 years, I've been a civil engineer, and I've also had a film company that entire time. Because I come from humble beginnings and I had to figure out a way to get my films financed and be able to pay for my rent and all those things. So side by side, I built this film company and finally we were able to get something done. So I knew Randy from working on some civil engineering projects. And I work with him and I always used to tease him that one of these days I'm going to have money to make a movie. I'm going to put you in it because you just have this incredible way about you. And it's fun to watch and it's fun to listen to you talk. So he didn't ever believe me, but then I got the funding for this movie and he loved it. And everybody loves him.
I loved him. He plays Fred. You know, it may go to his head now. I mean, now he may move to LA and just say, this is what I'm going to do.
I know. I call him Clark Gable.
Right. You know, it's really interesting. When somebody says, look, I want to be a filmmaker. I want to, you know, and you are an actor. This was not your first film, by the way. Actually, your journey between L.A. and New York is sort of interesting. I'll get to that in just a second. But what's really intriguing is what you should have said is, well, I wanted to be a filmmaker and stuff. So I was a waiter. You know, I wanted to be a filmmaker. So I worked at Culver's. Who goes into civil engineering to say that's what I'll do while I'm making
Isn't that interesting? It's so simple. My parents worked so hard their whole life, but we never had anything. They were always worried about every penny. So I wanted to find a job that was stable. And civil engineering, if the economy tanks,
it's stable.
They put money into public works. So that's how I looked at it. It was a stable job for me to figure out how a guy like me that doesn't come from anything, that doesn't have money, how am I going to be able to make a career? And I just, I didn't, because I struggled for so long, seeing my parents struggle, I didn't want to be a waiter and suffer that way. I admire all the actors that do that, but I needed a different route, and I just blazed my own trail.
You took a serious one, by the way.
Yeah, and I was so blessed. I worked on some of the coolest projects. I was on the Jane Byrne Interchange, which is a $1 billion interchange in Chicago. I worked on that for 10 years. It was so much fun, and still working on the side, believe it or not. I was literally working 70 or 80 hours a week on the interchange and 10 or 20, you know, on the movie trying to keep things moving.
Wow. Just that's very cool. I do want to talk a little bit about your journey, because it's not as though you were a civil engineer who said, and I'll play with this filmmaking thing. You up and moved yourself to LA, I think a couple of times. Am I right that while, you know, things happen for a reason, sometimes we don't know what they are, but in the end, I'll let you tell the story, but maybe you were just a handshake away from Denzel Washington.
Yes. So that's what happened. So I went to LA the first time. And my agent was Jack Scagnetti, great agent. I think he's passed now, wonderful guy. And I was calling him every week, Jack, where are the auditions? You know, months would go by. I'd get a small one. And
I'm here. I'm ready.
Yeah, months and months would go by. So finally, I'm a very driven person. And I got frustrated. And you'll love this. So Steve Friedman is my cousin, and he's the former executive producer of The Early Show. So I went out there hoping that Steve could help me get some auditions at Law and Order, some of the bigger shows out there. So that was the reason I decided to go. And as soon as I get there, and I spent every dollar that I had on an Amtrak ticket across country, I get a call from Jack Scagnetti saying there's an audition for Training Day with Denzel Washington. Very small one, but nevertheless, it was one. And I told him I can't afford to come back.
Out of curiosity, this will tell me a little bit about how you do life. Is your view on that it was meant to be, or is your view on that I should have called somebody and borrowed train fare?
No, it was meant to be, because, and that's another reason. I'm very honest with myself. The only way I landed roles is when I had a lot of time to prepare for the audition. Something like Training Day, where you gotta go in like literally the next day with sides and memorize 4 or 5 pages. That wasn't my thing. I need time to prepare, so I wouldn't have landed it. I have to be honest about it.
Well, I think you would have, but what do I know? In this film, in Say Her, the first, I should have clocked it. I didn't. You probably know. But the first many minutes, we see Clay sort of working out. Not a lot of lines, but we see his process and procedure. Clearly, you've written this film and stuff. So what was your message in saying the audience needs to see his life as it lays out and where he's living and how he's living and what's going on here? Because we don't get into the story involving other people for quite some time into the film.
It's a wonderful question. I really wanted to honor. So these Olympian weightlifters, they train in gyms, very old school gyms, similar to Sarah Park. And a lot of times they train by themselves. There's not a lot of people in the sport, and they're incredible athletes, and it takes so much time. It's like Piros Dimas, the GOAT, says it's like ballet with 500 pounds on your back or 500 pounds over your head. It's so intricate, the movements, and you have to do so much detailed training for years and years to dial it in to be able to compete at the highest level. So I wanted to honor that, show that gym time, and also honor the incredible effort it takes to be great at anything, to be great as an analyst like you, as a reporter like you, to be great as an engineer, to be great as a construction worker, to be great as a psychologist, a doctor. I just wanted to honor that tremendous work ethic that it takes for any of us to be good at something.
And that you did. But of course, it serves for me a broader purpose as well, because we get to know Clay in a very interesting way and not through just him saying, let me tell you my story. Seeing who he is.
Right. And like, I know you're being a theater person, and thank you for all the work that you do for theater and have done for theater in Chicago and New York. I thought that you would appreciate the Sinatra, just the classic. And for him, because of his mental health issues, he could never have a relationship with a woman, but he so wanted that. And there's no song like a Sinatra ballad that shows that pining.
Exactly. And again, I'm trying not to give too much away, but you do have other characters in the movie. We're almost not sure if they're, well, I'm thinking of one woman. We're not sure how real she might be, but there's almost a fear. What's that?
No, that's exactly right.
It's like, is she real? Is she not? Because they, you know, it's sort of, we'll put things. Yeah. Talk about that. You had a lot of dynamics in your head about how to have that play out.
Yeah. So I don't want to give too much away, but it's also cool to talk about this stuff. So he needed to have a conversation with himself internally as to coming to terms with the fact that his Olympic dream is done. And he was running from that. He couldn't have it. So Becca Morello, who's a wonderful actor, an incredible person, Chicago actor, she fit the bill so well for this role. He needed to be encouraged and prompted to move forward in his life. And she serves that purpose. And it's meant to be ambiguous whether she's there or not. But as long as we're talking about it, that's a part of his mental health struggle. He had this delusion, and he needed this delusion to move forward with his life. So she is. She is a delusion. She didn't exist.
What I find interesting, again, because you're the writer of this is not the first film, right? You've written, I think this got made first, but there's other things you've had in the pipeline. Right. So obviously a lot of creative talent having to go into this, into creating this. Can you talk a little bit about that process? In other words, you just explained how we have this person, how he's got to have the dialogue in it. So it makes sense to me because I've watched the movie. But I'm curious what was going on in your mind when you said to yourself, how do I inform a viewing audience about what's going on in his mind? In other words, the process to craft the characters you needed to make it happen.
Right. It's, you know, I've just always, to digress a little bit, man, I've been surrounded by mental health issues in the family. My grandmother, her dad was killed in the First World War. And after that happened, her mother was really upset that she had to raise children on her own. So she told her that, I wish you were never born. And that one sentence affected her whole life. She had obsessive compulsion. Like, she would push the faucets closed. We would have to pull her away. She'd strip the faucets. She'd turn the lights on and off. And I looked at that saying, okay, someone was told their mother said they wish they'd never been born. And she could never do anything right in her own mind. So that's how I looked at that. Her husband, my grandfather, had a similar situation. He was beaten and thrown out of his house at 13. His parents were very poor in Germany. And throughout his whole life, he had panic attacks. My dad used to have to go pick him up at places because he couldn't move. And all of that stemmed from being, have not having the security, you know, of being, having loving parents and being cared for. And it just affected their whole life, both my grandma and grandfather. So I, mental health has been such a, it's been such a passion for me to tell the stories of these people that are so hurt. And so I worked that in. I wanted him to have certain mental health issues as part of the story. And yeah, having Becca play Mo, her character in the movie, she just, she shows a side of him that's more relatable to the audience, because he's, not everyone can really relate to him because he's so unique. And I just love the idea of having this delusion that this is someone. So it's kind of ambiguous. Are they, is there going to be here's the stranger that comes in. Are they going to have a romantic relationship? Are they going to be friends? Where is this going? I kind of like all that ambiguity going on throughout the dialogue, but ultimately having her as this delusion, which he needed to create in his mind. They have this, pretty much he's another personality that he had to create to move forward and have a conversation he couldn't have with himself.
Did you write the film for Jared to be Clay, or did you write the film and ultimately decide, you know, I think I'd make the best Clay here?
You'll love this story. You'll love this. So I had another movie I was just a producer on in New York, Buffalo, New York. It was all ready to go, fully funded. Plane tickets were booked for the crew and actors. And due to issues totally beyond my control, we had some health issues come up with the crew. We had to pull the plug on that. So that was a story set in the Olympic weightlifting world, like a Rocky type story, much more formulaic than say her was. And the lead role was going to be played by Zach Tellender, which is Rick Tellender's son. And when that happened, I needed to make a movie set in the lifting world. And after that one tanked, I talked to the director. I said, listen, I'm going to write something completely different in the lifting world. And you want to be a part of it? The director didn't want to be a part of it. He was still kind of dealing with that movie not happening. And I reached out to the Zach, who had the lead role in that, to see if he wanted to come play this. And they weren't interested. So I rewrote it for an older person, because originally it was, he was supposed to be 30 years old. And then I realized, as you stated, that I was born to play it, just because I felt the story so deeply.
Were there real weights on those?
They, a lot of people asked that, and they told me to lie about it when people ask. So they were real, they're real weights, but Olympic weightlifting has these bumper plates. That's what you train with, so you can drop it and not damage the platforms. So those were actually...
Yeah, they're worried about the platform, not you.
Right, right. And those were 1984 Olympic platforms, actually, from the LA Olympics. They were the practice platforms that they brought back, which is kind of cool.
But you were actually, I mean, you yourself, so, did you grow up as a weightlifter? Was that part of what you would do?
I always loved sports. And I don't know if Coach Conway was Coach Conway at Niles North when you were there?
Oh, that Coach Conway. Yes, he was. Yes, he was there. It was in his young days. Yes.
Yes. So he, Coach Conway, saw me always in the gym training.
We know another Coach Conway, but go ahead.
Oh, cool. So yeah, he always saw me in the gym training for football and track. And he saw how much I like to lift weights. He's like, you know, the head Olympic coach is in Chicago, and we have several Olympians training. Why don't you go over there? So that's how I found out about it. I was there, had a lot of fun, trained with Olympians, which was so cool. But the poor factor came in, and I couldn't afford to go travel for all these meets. So I wasn't able to do it for that long. But I learned enough to be able to play Clay. I learned, had enough technique to be able to play him adequately.
Gotcha. And by the way, for me, gym was the one grade that brought my overall GPA down every single semester. So had you cast me as Clay, we would have also had to hire a stand-in or something who would actually be doing the weightlifting.
But it's funny because people did ask, like, why don't you lie? I'm like, I'm not going to lie. They're like, it looks like you were lifting 300 pounds. I said it was about half that.
Okay.
The bumper plates don't weigh that much.
But it plays very well.
No, thank you.
And so in getting this done, you mentioned you had another project that was going at the time. Do you return to that? Are all efforts on Say Her, or are there now other projects in the pipe, so to speak?
Yeah, so that project, we felt the right thing to do was return the money to the investors. I was one of the investors, so we didn't return everything, but whatever we could, because we had incurred some expenses, because it was such a much bigger budget project and there was no way to get it back on track. So that one, it's still possible it could be made, but I'm not involved at this time, and I don't know if it ever.
So all the efforts are here. I know you've had some screenings of it. So for folks who haven't seen it, and we'll send them to a website so they can check to see what's coming up. What kind of reaction are you having as you do these screenings and get feedback?
So it's been wonderful, especially since I don't know a lot of the people that are coming. They're strangers. Their friends are bringing them.
That's who you want.
That's exactly what we want. And it's so wonderful to see we're hitting across racial lines, we're hitting across religious lines, we're hitting across young, old, blue collar, white collar. And it's been so wonderful to see that. And we've been telling our prospective distributor, I'm really fortunate. I met Michael Barker, the co-president of Sony Pictures Classics, 15 years ago at the Ebert Fest in Champaign. I know you and I are also Champaign alums. So.
Absolutely. I know Ebert Fest. I was just down there, in fact, this past weekend. So, yes.
Yeah. So he was so cool.
We'll talk about the best champagne pizza at another time.
Oh, right. But yeah, he was so cool. He said at first I had a script for him. It's this movie, Open Roads, which I've been trying to get made for years. And it's next on the agenda. It's set at the Mercy Home for Boys and Girls, a lot of it. And I asked him if he would take a look at the script 15 years ago. He said, I'm not allowed to take unsolicited scripts, but you seem like a decent kid. So he took it. And that started a mentoring relationship with Seth Horowitz, who's the executive vice president of acquisitions there. So I've been friends with him for 15 years. They told me get a feature made. So I got Say Her made. They watched it. They liked it. But it's the industry, you know how it is now. The filmmaker has to build the buzz. So that's why being on your show is so wonderful, because we're just trying to get the word out to let everybody know about it. And the more press we have, the more excited Sony Pictures Classics will be. And I know we'll get it out in the theaters through them. They've just been great to work with.
And we'll keep an eye on the website so people can find it as it grows. You know, oftentimes I've been giving you a lot of kudos, well-deserved, for the directing, the writing, the acting. But I have to tell you, something else struck me as I watched this. And that was the photography in this.
Yeah.
The way it was filmed, the way it was edited. And so when the credits came up, I kind of watched for those names. I'm going to mess up his last name potentially, but Michael Smyzik.
Mike Simic. It's a hard name. Simic. He's wonderful.
Simic. Well, yeah. It's easier than it's spelled.
But
I mean, that's just, he did an amazing job. That's like Academy Award level stuff that he did, in my view.
That is so wonderful to hear you say that. He is so wonderful to work with. It was such a blessing. I had some cinematographer friends in LA, some that have worked on huge movies, and a lot of them, I think, are kind of semi-retired now, so I wasn't getting any response. So I found him. He owns a company called Vidart. He's made four or five of his own features. In addition, he does a lot of wedding stuff and things like that. But I watched his features, and they were really good. And he is so gifted, and he's just the nicest person ever. And we shot this in 5 days, and he's such a perfectionist, as am I, but we had such a tight timeline. I had to say, Mike, we can't get another angle there. We have to move on. He was so understanding of that, but he was so good, and his editing is so good. And I'm so thankful to hear you say that. He'll be thrilled.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, he did really a superb job. Let me also talk about the score a little bit with David Robbins, because you've got the music, but at the same time, you've got some Sinatra in there. I'm assuming you're responsible for maybe you're not. I don't know. Who decides that? Who decides we're going Sinatra now, or we're going to go something original here?
Yeah, so David was so wonderful to work with. He's done so many great films. And I was actually out visit him when he was helping out, and I went to the Actors Gang. I don't know if you've seen them. Him and Tim Robbins have the Actors Gang Theater. Okay. It was wonderful. I saw a show there. But yeah, so I let him rip. Basically, I said, go with your heart, go with your gut, and see what we come up with. So he just watched the film. I didn't give him a lot of notes, and he came back with me. And most of the stuff I used exactly where he wanted. Some of the stuff I used at different spots, which he thought was cool. And Yeah, the music is so cool. So we have him, we have Freddie Saldone, who gave us five
He did your
songs for the
soundtrack, right?
soundtrack. And I love Freddie, and he's also a Niles North alum, which is
Oh.
cool, and a longtime friend of mine, and very, very talented both in English and Spanish. He's released records worldwide in Spanish also, which are incredible. And so, yeah, it was to be able to play with Freddie's work and transition into David's work and then have the Sinatra. I made the final call on where to put everything, but it kind of unfolded just so naturally and transitioned together so naturally.
It sounds like the ultimate message here is go to Niles North if you want to become successful in
Yes,
the future.
exactly.
I mean, we've sent people to Broadway. We've got them all over the place, which is fantastic. You know, and Jerry, there's kind of a theme when you know, the mental health issues, the work hard issues, the everyday person issues. There seems to be an under, if you write 20 films in your career, I mean, I don't know, you tell me, but I don't feel like I'm going to get Terminator 12 out of you, that's not where you're headed. It looks like there's a consistency to the kinds of issues, societal issues, you think should be and need be addressed.
Yes. So, a lot of Clay's storyline, I was able to tap into those emotions because as an engineer, I worked in a lot of the neighborhoods most affected by the shootings. I saw a lot of gun violence personally. I saw a lot of kids suffering on the street. There's a scene in the movie where you see Clay kind of acting out his version of Jacob wrestling in the Bible. He's doing it via shadow boxing, but I took that. Just so much tragedy on the streets. I took that from one particular gentleman. I was working one day on a site, and he was just so enraged. He was every car that he walked by, he was punching as hard as he could the window and just would move on to the next one and just screaming incoherently. And I saw so much of that. There's so much mental health stuff going on in the neighborhoods most affected by the shootings because no human being should live in this environment. So I'm really, really passionate about changing that. And that's why, as you and I spoke offline weeks back, 50% of my earnings from this movie will go toward Chicago CRED, which is Arne Duncan, former Secretary of
Sure.
Education, Alabama, his agency, doing incredible work in these neighborhoods trying to reduce the gun violence, and Mercy Home for Boys and Girls, which is an institution in Chicago helping at-risk youth for many, many years. I just have a huge passion for youth and for peace.
So
And
future projects will probably see common themes.
yes, absolutely. It's something it's just at my core. And I think a lot of it stems from the stories I told about my grandparents, seeing how even just in those cases, just words and actions, really transform their life for the worse for their whole entire life experience. And then those are words, but then you look at someone growing up in gun violence, seeing gun violence every day. How are they supposed to have a life? How are they supposed to respond naturally or calmly to anything? It's when you're on edge like that. So I want us as humanity to grow out of this and not have the next generation of kids have to experience these type of things.
That's so powerful because growing up, and maybe now this is a Niles North reference, but the truth is, growing up in that neighborhood, we didn't see a lot of that stuff.
Oh, no.
Life was good, life was cheery. And as time went on, I would be a principal for a day in various schools. And I
Right.
remember one quick line where a student said to me, "Look, when you're 15, you're either dead or you're in jail." And you hear something like that, and you just say, I something needs to be done.
No, and as a human being, when I would witness a shooting or I would see some act of violence, the result of it, as a human, you're just the rage that comes to someone, another person would do this to somebody else. And I could see how this rage, if you don't get a hold of it, can cause you to be in jail or to cause you to be dead. I felt it because I was living in those, working 12-hour days in those neighborhoods where these folks are living. And yeah, it's we were fortunate when we grew up. We had people from all over the world living together, every religion living together in peace. And that's how it has to be. But when you're seeing this type of violence, it's hard to have peace. And
Which
that's
means that the point of Say Her is much deeper than it's the story of the weightlifter who, but it's a lot deeper than that, and you know that, and you share that with me. I'm curious whether you have had contacts with the Chicago public school system, or for that matter, school systems anywhere, but it's so Chicago. or Arnie Duncan. I mean, are there ties that you've made tied to this movie to have screenings, to have people in those environments? Because I can see young people watching this movie and getting the deeper message, yet especially perhaps young boys, really right. getting caught up in a good way into the whole weightlifting piece of it.
No, absolutely. No, Chicago Cred's aware of the film. Mercy Home's aware of the film. And the more we start getting out there, with thanks to you and this wonderful show and all the other things we plan on doing in the future, we definitely want to get together with them and have screenings with them and push the film along. It's really at the test screenings, the discussions we've had afterwards, we realize that this is really just a voice for the voiceless on so many levels. We're speaking for the kids growing up in these neighborhoods just trying to survive, that don't often get their voices heard. The lifting community, which is such a wonderful weightlifting community throughout the world, but here in the U.S., it's been flying under the radar for so long. And now it's exploding out of its shell with this great performance in Paris, and coming up in L.A. is going to be even better. And then folks with mental health issues that don't get their stories told, that also an unsung voice. And then the last thing is we inserted some cool footage from the Jane Byrne Interchange, which I worked on, to honor the trades, who oftentimes people get mad that they're stuck in traffic, and they're upset that their day is screwed up. But here are these folks, men and women, are working to make these beautiful pieces of infrastructure for us, and that we take it for granted. So those are like the voices that are unheard that we wanted to, make heard.
So here's the unfair question, Jared, as we get close to wrapping up. And that is, because there are so many levels to this movie, we've talked through all of them. That's good.
Right.
But if I gave you one sentence to say to somebody, why should I see Say Her?
That's a great question. The reason to see it is because it shows that someone like Clay, who had all this adversity, everything in his life pointed to him being nothing and probably being dead or in jail. And he was able to take all that pain that he had in his life, turn it into progress. And while he wasn't able to become an Olympian like he wanted, he proved that someone with these major type of hiccups, major type of mental health issues, can still do something positive and something very wonderful, like mentor a young woman and get her to the Olympic Games and kind of live his dream through her. It speaks to folks that you would never think could have a chance at having a positive impact on society, someone suffering so much like him. But he does. He has a wonderful impact through her.
So you've given us the plot line, but you've taken it to a larger level. That's a tricky thing to do, but you've done it. Jared Kirschheimer, congratulations on the film Say Her. Website so people can check it out and track it?
Yes. Say Her Film on Instagram, SayHerFilm on Instagram. We would be so grateful. Say SayHerFilm, all one word.
Got it.
If they could just take a moment to click follow. That's another way we're showing so many classics that we have an audience where we've built up from zero to well over 1,000 really quickly. And we're looking on,
We're going to send people there. Jared Kirschheimer, congratulations on a great film. It's quite an accomplishment. I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you so much for this great day, Paul. Thank you.